10 years ago, the major challenge was to keep the fish alive, and cost be damned. The idea was a bit with the WeWork attitude that we will worry about profitability later, and if it costs a few more millions per farm to make sure it doesn't fail, that was the way to go. But now that the question has been answered, we know what are the critical parameters that fish need to thrive in those systems, and it's the right stage for a sector to rethink how it deploys, how it engineers and constructs its systems. And as fantastical as it sounds in Rust to say lower capex, faster assembly, modularity, plug and play, this is almost the baseline in any mature industry.
Welcome to RAS Talk, the podcast on recirculating aquaculture systems and sustainable food production. Brought to you by RAS Tech Magazine, the premier publication for recirculating aquaculture systems professionals. This episode is sponsored by OxyGuard International. Secure, grow, evolve. Improve your production with tailored and targeted technology. Hello, everyone. My name is Jean Codin, and I'm the editor of RAS Tech Magazine.
Hello, I'm Justin Henry. I've been in the RAS space since 1996.
So this episode is a bit of a special one. Justin and I just came back from RAS Tech 2024 conference, which is basically my biggest project of the year as RAS Tech Magazine editor. And I don't know about you, Justin, but I feel exhausted. I feel relieved. I feel like everyone was happy to be there. I don't know. I think it's such a great relief to kind of be able to see all of the speakers and all of the presentations that came together, which I've been working on for a year now.
Yeah, Jean, normally the RAS Tech conference is the place to get updated on RAS and to network with a few hundred people that are dialed in on RAS, and this year was no exception. It was a pretty intensive couple of days.
And I should thank you as well, Justin, for coming and for kind of being a part of the planning process a little bit for me as well. What did you think of the show overall?
Jean, I thought the show was really good this year. Again, the experts that are there and all of the knowledge that gets shared in the presentations is super valuable for everyone in the sector, you know, for companies that are new or don't know much about RAS or want to get into RAS, all the way through to people who have been doing RAS for decades. There's lots to learn and lots of new technologies that continue to get developed that you can get updated on, and also updates on companies that have been successful. Overall, I think that people were pretty upbeat and positive with some results coming out from some of the producers out there that look pretty good.
Yeah, for sure. And I think my goal for these conferences or for this event in particular has always been to bring in the industry and get them all in the same room and talk about solving the problems that they need to solve, talk about the challenges, the lessons learned. And hopefully this conference continues to do that. Speaking of, one of the keynotes that we chose for this year, or I chose for this year, was to invite AquaFounders Capital Managing Directors Ohad Maimon and Tui Holm. This time last year, they just recently launched their new venture capital firm, and they talked about their vision for RAS. So it was really important for me to invite them back and to kind of bring them back to the industry and talk about what they learned in their first year. And I think that's what they're going to talk about in this episode. It's a little bit longer than our usual episodes, so I hope you enjoy every bit of it. The first 20 minutes of it is sort of a presentation about their organization and what their vision and what their perspective is, both as veterans of the industry, but also coming from traditional net pen farming as well and their history with aquaculture in general. So that's sort of the wisdom that they're kind of bringing in to this presentation. And then the next half of the session is an audience Q&A, but also a Q&A between me as the moderator and them as speakers. You'll also hear Justin ask a few questions in there along with the audience. So we hope you enjoy this episode. Please enjoy this special RAS Talk podcast with Ohad Maimon and Tui Holm at RAS Tech 2024.
Very nice to see this very packed room from what seems to have started many years ago as a small conference. We'll try to keep our presentation rather brief and open for Q&A. And start with a quick round of intros. My name is Ohad Maimon. I first developed an obsession for land-based aquaculture around 2013 when I learned that it's one of the few major food sectors that has a significant bottleneck on global supply. 2015, I co-founded a Kingfish company with Case Kloot and Hans Den Biemann. Spent a very busy 7 years building it up to the largest land-based kingfish farm in globally, based in Europe, with a second site in development in Maine. And about a year and a half ago, after 7 years as CEO, stepped down and started focusing on new technologies and new species that ended up finding, thank you very much, common ground with Tua. To you.
Yeah, I'm Tue Holm, and I've been 20 years in this business, and when I look out here, I probably know 90% of you.
Land-based is hailed as the most sustainable way of producing fish as well, but I think here a side note in the title from our perspective is that it's not a free pass. We've seen some projects that locate right next to successful wild fisheries, but tout a more expensive product for higher sustainability. And frankly, I would warn against that. Consumers expect sustainability, but are not necessarily looking to pay a premium for it. The question of, is it up to the task? I think what you're seeing here is what we consider a significant pipeline of projects, both 200 plus projects announced that you can find in the Spheric Research Land-Based Aquaculture report. And when we multiply that by average cost and CapEx, it is a pipeline of billions waiting to be built. There are challenges that we'll touch on in a moment, but I think an important note on this slide as well is that while focus is on grow out operations, a major engine for the development of the sector is still post-smolt. Even in times where there's been question marks about the viability of land-based grow-out or full grow-out operations, large players in salmon continue to deploy capacity of post-smolt, and that supports the whole sector.
Yeah, and I can add, I mean, many people doubt that this is an exponential industry, right? And you can just see that back in 2007, when I went to Norway and talked about RAS systems and people laughing, we had enough flow through, we had enough water. And now Norway and many other salmon producing countries are like the biggest implementers of it. Like 90% of that graph is salmon, right? So it's really developing fast, but it's a huge opportunity for the technologies and everything to develop, because you suddenly have a huge base of revenues that's coming in every year to build more and more capacity, right?
Hear a bit about the general zeitgeist or the mood. For any of you reading industry press in the last 2 years, there it would have been understandable to think that the obituaries in the press meant the end of land-based aquaculture. However, these attitudes are cyclical, and what we're seeing now is early pioneers like Kingfisher, Sapphire, and a handful of others proving that they can consistently deliver significant volumes of high-quality product to market. The way we often look at the sector now is a bit of the analogy of the days of production hell Model 3 in Tesla, where it's been proven that you can produce an expensive, high-value fish to market in RAS. But now the challenges and the task at hand is to make it scalable, profitable, and unleash the potential of the sector. He will go a bit on the challenges, and we'll try to not make it depressing because there is a way out of them and solutions that people in this room can help develop. First challenge for a new land-based aquaculture project is the high upfront cost of design. It is often a year plus and a few millions until you find out that the system you wanted is too expensive. If you've gone through this first phase, you have easily 2 to 3 years of construction. And when you add the construction time and cost, the escalating capex, and time for revenues, you would find many VCs and PEs saying, no, thank you, we're going for real estate. The operational know-how is the next challenge. These farms require quick reaction, usually late at night around Christmas vacation when things go wrong, and there aren't so many experienced operators out there. And last on the list of five challenges we see is the actual business case. The fact that we can grow almost any fish almost anywhere doesn't necessarily mean we should, and we'll touch on that as well. Beyond to you two to describe some of the pains of operational complexity.
Yeah, I think I should be able to do that. No, I mean, one of the biggest bottlenecks of land-based farming is the high complexity. You're suddenly dealing with if you go to a pig stable or a cow stable or chicken farm, I mean, there's a lot of technology involved in the medicines and in the genetics and all of these kinds of things, but the operation is not that complicated, right? Here, we're suddenly working with a fish that lives a lot longer. We have a lot of more technology pumps, controls, sensors, and stuff like that. And then suddenly, you also have to deal with the bacteria at the same time. So it is much more complex than farming, and the world is evolving, and we are getting better and better, the human race, at doing more and more complex things. But it doesn't mean we're there yet completely with the land-based farming to make it scalable. So so one of the biggest limitations we see in the RAS land-based space is people. You really need high-skilled people that takes a long time to get there. And this we need to solve. If we really need to scale this industry, we really need to solve this for mass production. I mean, we are talking, 2,000 tons, 10,000 tons, or something like that, but we are talking about that RAS maybe should be out there in 20 or 30 years producing 100 million tons. That's not... We need to find a way to scale and find a way to do that with people and find solutions so people can work in a fish farm. That's very important challenge for the industry.
Right there next to the operational complexities, indeed high capex and lengthy construction. I think one of the most frustrating experiences I had during Kingfish is literally standing by the hole in the ground waiting for concrete to dry. And that translates to lower IRRs for investors. The idea of invest now and you'll start seeing revenues after a year of design, 2 years of construction, 2 years of farming, year 6, 7, if nothing goes wrong, is just not so appealing. I think you've done more than watching the concrete dry there. Please share your view.
No, I mean, it is an extremely complicated project process, and many farms are not equipped to take on a big project. You start out with a small team, and then suddenly you are in a huge construction project that requires a lot of complexity, and often with suppliers that hasn't been working in that area, or suppliers that has been working in the area but never has built a fish farm before. So it is a really, really challenging, and that's we've seen that all around the world. That becomes is a huge obstacle for the industry.
I think that if we look at other mature sectors, almost any industry, both the operational complexity in the previous slide and the capex uncertainty and lengthy construction periods should be challenges that could be overcome. And we're convinced that technology and advanced operating softwares can help on the operational complexity side. and maturity of the sector to bring it to a place where there is a rule of thumb on construction, on capex, and faster assembly are critical for the development of the sector. A bit about the business case. The way we see it, land-based still is closest to greenhouses as far as the logic behind the technology. If you can grow corn in Idaho in open fields, there's no reason to try to put it in a greenhouse. If you're growing tomatoes in Mexico, the fields are optimal. But if you're growing tomatoes in the Netherlands in the winter, a greenhouse makes a lot of sense. So beyond the nice to have sustainability credentials of the sector, it has to be competitive and make financial sense as well. You can have a major advantage by deploying at the market where effectively you can pocket the difference of the long-term, the long-range logistics, as well as enable your customers to eliminate waste or shortage. When a chef or a restaurant supplier in Europe or orders kingfish from Australia, or in the US orders salmon from Norway fresh, they have to guess what they need next week, and they often end up with either waste or shortage. When they switch to a local RAS supplier, they're able to put one or two standing orders and top up if necessary, which goes a long way on, well, sustainability as well, but on the business case.
Let's get on with it.
Yes. So here a bit about Aqua Founders. Well, last year we were contemplating a VC route and investing in several companies to then later consolidate them into technology, hardware, software, and farming operations. We've decided to focus on effectively being more of a project development company, developing our own companies to tackle challenges as we see them, as well as supporting a few other project. The way we tackle the challenges we mentioned today is by no means the only way to tackle it, but these are sort of the logical lines where we encourage companies to think of the sector. The first one is the farm in a box. We've spent most of the last year developing a design that takes on principles from greenhouses, from windmills, from more mature industries where by now we think we know what the fish needs, and we had to rethink how to build them. And the idea here, we estimate a year from setting up a demo R&D unit and being able to deliver it, is a prefabricated solution where, depending on your needs of salinity, species, temperature, and production pipeline, we can skip the expensive engineering phase per project, tailor the solution by different pieces and modules of a pre-engineered and prefabricated system, and assemble on site in weeks or months rather than years. We've shown this before, but had some questions on whether this is a hobby container. The idea there is to effectively be able to deploy thousands of tons, but again, with a flat site, with a utility grid and deployment on site.
Yeah, I think what we really try to do is rethink what we've done in the last years. I mean, if you take RAS farms today, of course, there's been a lot of the development in equipment and everything, but basically there's not a big difference from the first eel farms I saw in the 80s to what we're doing in big scale now. And we really had to go back to first principles and rethink how can we get through some of all of these challenges that's holding the industry back. And that really took a lot of new thinking and making things much more simple and much more automated. So it's much easier to operate and it's much easier to install from a lot of principle in relation to how you do electrical installation easy, how we're not putting a single pipe in the ground, there's no excavation further than flattening the site, all of these kind of things that makes the construction super fast. We expect a farm with one crew like this would be able to do this this farm in probably 30 weeks. If you put two crews, it could be done in 15 weeks. So it changes the whole picture of how we do land-based today. And that's what we're going to be working on really, really hard in the next years.
And on the business case of farming, we've recently announced the Black Code company in the Netherlands. Again, I think the trifecta as we see it of a high value species deployed at the relevant market and a species that is viable for us are three important factors to consider when thinking of a business case in land-based. With Black Cod, for example, global supply is about 23,000 tons out of North America. It is imported to Europe, the Gulf, UK, Japan, and these would be the places where we would consider deploying, not necessarily in the US next to direct competition with Alaskan fisheries. I think that a similar, way of thinking should be applied as a stress test to any other. There's no one-size-fits-all answer here that RAS should only be salmon anywhere in the world or any specific species. It has to have a competitive advantage and to fit the relevant market, species, and value. I think that with that we are, conclusion. We think, land-based sector is showing significant promise. In many ways, it is the only way we see to produce more seafood globally. But these challenges we mentioned today of lowering capex, shortening construction times, and focusing on the right solid business cases are the type of focus points we think are critical for the sector to fulfill or deliver on its potential.
Yeah.
I think we're happy to open for questions.
Adam. Hello. Hi, everybody. Okay, I'm going to start with my own questions first, if you don't mind, gentlemen, if you can stand over in the center stage. Please give another round of applause for Ohai Maimon and Tui Holm for their presentation. I have a feeling, especially with this crowd, I'm going to keep my Q&A short and leave some questions for you guys. So I'll start with, you mentioned a little bit, gentlemen, about the shift in focus with Aqua Founders Capital in your first year. Last year you announced Aqua Founders Capital just a little before last year's RASTAC event. With this first year of experience, what were the factors that helped inform your shift in focus from, investing in the technology and the operation to now being involved in the two projects that you've mentioned?
You want to go? Okay.
Sure. Right.
No, I think very much what we were thinking is, we the way we started Aqua Founders Capital is actually by that we both found out that we have a very shared understanding of what we think that needs to happen to the sector. And basically, that's how in February last year that we started talking together and figuring out we want to do something, but we didn't really know how, right? And one of the ways we could have done this is by basically creating a venture capital fund that could go and invest in companies we thought was doing the right thing, and then kind of combining the efforts and collaborate to solve some of the issues. But what we really saw is that we didn't find the right way to do this. We didn't find the combination of doing that. And we also are not bankers. We are founders. We are entrepreneurs. And so we really thought that it would be a much better route to actually go and initiate these companies instead of having a VC fund and sit on 20 different boards and try to make people collaborate and try to get these things going. So I think that's really what motivated us to try to do it differently, and we are collaborating a lot of the people in this room already within these companies, and I think that helped us much more, and this is what we know to do, how to do.
Yeah, I think I fully agree with your points there. It's partly getting to know what you're good at and what you're not, and what we learned through the process is that our experience in building companies makes more sense in developing directly the solutions we have a clear vision of now, rather than learning a whole new set of skills of being investment professionals.
And your perspective on the direction of the industry is certainly reflected on the projects that you are, or the company is involved in. So I want to ask a question about Farm in a Box. And what I was curious about with that particular technology was the idea of the modularity of it and the very the plug-and-play nature of the technology. How do you balance that plug-and-play concept or that fast construction concept while also making it applicable to a diverse set of species, a diverse set of systems, and how do you kind of make it versatile and flexible while still plug and play?
I think part is the shift in state of mind of Russ, where 10 years ago the major challenge was to keep the fish alive and cost be damned. The idea was a bit with the WeWork attitude that we will worry about profitability later. And if it costs a few more millions per farm to make sure it doesn't fail, that was the way to go. But now that the question has been answered, we know what are the critical parameters that fish need to thrive in those systems. It's the right stage for a sector to rethink how it deploys, how it engineers and constructs its systems. And as fantastical as it sounds in Rust to say lower capex, faster assembly, modularity, plug and play, this is almost the baseline in any mature industry. So we've spent quite some time looking at how they've done it in, if you wanted a greenhouse for either tomatoes in the Netherlands or roses in Siberia, a supplier needs to know the light conditions, temperature conditions, soil, and they can give you a plus minus 10% offer pretty much within a day or a week. There's no reason why RAS cannot develop along these lines like other complex sectors.
Was it a challenge to strike that balance between for the technology between, you know, making it versatile and applicable to multiple situations while also, you know, making sure that the system is, how do you make those decisions on kind of striking that balance in the technology? What do you decide is applicable or versatile enough for all types of customers?
I mean, first of all, I think you have to understand the business case a little more deeply of Farm in a Box. First of all, it is that we're going to deploy our own demo sites. So we are going to have our own sites developed for each species and applications or with other collaborators. But we're not going to sell systems before we have deliver a kingfish system or before we deliver a post-smolt system. We will have a functioning unit for that, those cases. So I also think what we see a lot is that, you know, a lot of farms get built out there and then they don't exactly fit the parameters, and there's a lot of rebuilds and overruns on the capex and all of these things. So it's very important to have a functioning product. I mean, if you buy a windmill and it only produces 4 megawatts instead of 5 megawatts, that's not happening, right? In mature industries, this doesn't happen. And for example, in the Danish windmill industry or the global windmill industry, you have test sites, and all the models that's going to the market has been thoroughly tested and been run in different conditions and all of these kind of things and been producing before they go to market. And that's very much our philosophy of doing that, and we want to do it ourselves. And it's also to be able to develop the right control softwares and all of these kinds of things before you go to market with these units. But the great thing is when you do that, then that can be multiplied a lot of times, right? So yeah, it's a different approach than what you traditionally have seen in the RAS sector.
I'm not sure if you're able to say, but do you have a to market date or a target date?
No.
No, I mean, I think...
Easy answer. That's okay. Yeah. I know that the Black Cod Company was something that was recently announced and it's still very new. So what can you share in terms of the numbers of the project? What scale are you looking at? What is the production targets that you're looking at? What can you share?
I think that we will start in the Netherlands in a site to be announced soon. The idea would be to developed a full cycle hatchery and an initial relatively small volume of production for the European market, and later contemplated expansion whether on site in the Netherlands or potentially with satellite grow out systems in relevant markets such as the Gulf, UK or Japan.
Do you have a size of the scale that it's going to be, or a production scale?
That's something we're in discussions with strategic investors. It's interesting to see that the knee-jerk reaction or the overcorrection of deploying thousands of tons like we did before, when bankers would urge you to take, why would you only raise 20 if you can raise 50 million? I think now we're slightly overcorrecting in the other direction. And I would urge any project of farming to think of what is the smallest and fastest you can reach break-even and profitability. It's much cheaper making mistakes and missing targets at low tonnage than at high tonnage. And once you've proven it, then the sky's the limit again.
We are working with a lot of different technology providers on this. We are not inventing the wheel in every case. So yeah, we are absolutely open, and we are in already conversations with many people in this room.
Hi there, I'm Amy Francetic from Buoyant Ventures. What kinds of programs or incentives could the United States government create to support the growth of RAS in the US? And do you have any examples from other countries that have been more supportive?
Yeah, I mean, for example, when we started the Atlantic Sapphire in Denmark, the EU had 30 to 40% of the investment cost in grants. And that's a really good level to give in grants for construction, because it's not high enough to that you can create a fake project. I mean, if you go over 50, 60%, then there's going to be a lot of people that are just doing the project to get the project done, and they can overbill and so on. But if you have down there in, let's say, 25 to 40% its trial, that really helps the project getting off the mark from RAS suppliers or from a project, because then you have that, and maybe you also have a little bit of a committed bank, and then you're already standing with maybe, let's say, 50 or 60% of the project financed. Then you really, it's much easier to attract investors, and then getting investors first in, and then you need to go and find the grants and the thing. So I think it's really important that the grants are given to the entrepreneurs really, really early on, so that they can bring that to the table, and that really makes a stronger business case, right? That's one way I would do it. Secondly, of course, I think more grants for that's not so complicated, that really involves in scientific things. Like, there's a lot of challenges in this industry, all flavor genetics, there's a lot of different things that needs to be continuously developed. And to get more grants that are specific to companies, and then maybe have scientific institutions involved. But what we see very much, especially in the US, is that the scientific community, and I'm going to get beaten up later today by saying this, but they basically take it all, will not necessarily have enough commercial partners in the project, but they are following down the line what they've been studying their whole life. And it's very important for me to have grants that actually are collaborating between universities and companies to solve real problems.
I think indeed the financial support is critical, just as it was for EVs or renewable energy, but also streamlining and simplifying the permitting process. I'm a big fan of democracy, but the idea that a single professional agitator can stop a project in its track for years because they don't like the idea of a fish farm in their backyard is complicating the scale of the sector.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm Ashby Frazier. I'm with Aurea Capital. It's set to launch an aquaculture fund for fourth quarter of this year. So I've been attended the Barcelona conference a couple weeks ago, and I met with a number of land-based CEOs with my colleague, and very impressed. I've completely bought into the idea of land-based aquaculture. However, being a company that acquires, that invests capital, investor capital, into publicly traded companies, that offers certain challenges because most companies are private. So when I see public companies, land-based public companies, I'm trying to identify the challenges that they incur. And the gap is almost too wide for me when I look at the financials. And I'm asking myself, why? When? What's the reason for the gap? And so I've kind of narrowed it down to water and labor engineers and that sort of thing. And I would like Omar to comment on that because I'm lost for where to invest my. I'm trying to get an edge on the market. What's an undervalued security? What's an overvalued security? And so. I can only identify two areas that could be the reason. It could be engineering. There's not enough engineers. A lot of people that design this, after they purchase the system from Rastec, the implementation of that system. And then the second thing would be the water. Two areas that could be the differentiating factor between why one company is trading at XPE and another company is trading at another PE. Sorry, it's a long question.
Yeah. Sure. So if I understand it correctly, you're looking for them to comment on the challenges or the different factors that truly influence the CapEx per kilogram and the profitability of it.
You know, why there's such a broad gap on some land-based companies doing extraordinarily well,
okay,
and incrementally and sequentially showing good numbers, and others having some challenges. I've got to figure out why.
Okay, gentlemen.
Well, I think part of it is what we mentioned is the trifecta for a solid business case. There's been quite a few projects deployed, in my personal opinion, with the wrong species in the wrong location. But once you're comfortable with the initial setup, like any other industry, it goes to the quality of the system, the quality of the management and operational team. And I guess in aquaculture, a little bit of luck. But as far as the multiples and PEs, I mean, I've seen that it goes beyond just the delivery of the company. It often is tied to the general mood. Whether you're on NASDAQ or the Norwegian Stock Exchange, many growth companies in other adjacent sectors of vertical farming were trading in billions of market cap a few years ago, and some of them are gone by now. If you want to add on that?
No. Thank you.
Thank you.
So how do you kind of right size, or how do you put the price to the right project, and how do you make sure when you're looking at these projects and these project proposals, how do you make sure that, yep, that's the right amount of capital that this particular project requires? What are the different factors that you're looking at?
I think it has to be attractive to investors, and depending on the type of stage of development and whether VC or PE, you can ask and they will tell you quite straightforward. They require 20% IRR or above, or some are willing to go a bit below if there's a sustainability aspect to it. And then you need to look to, effectively that calculates the answer of what's the maximum threshold of CapEx and time of deployment and time to revenue that a project can hold and still be viable as an investment.
There's certainly, we talked a lot about the challenges in terms of the road to RAS profitability, but what are the opportunities? Let's talk about that. What are you most excited about in terms of where the direction of the industry is going?
No, I think, I'm super excited about a lot of things in the industry. I mean, the technology is getting a lot better. We are developing a lot more people that can work in this industry. This room is getting bigger every year. We're seeing, companies like Grundfos, Danfoss, big players in the industrial market developing special products for the aquaculture industry, the land-based RAS aquaculture industry that we didn't see before. So there's like Bing, Disney also, and there's just so many companies that are really putting their efforts in to develop some special solutions for this. We are seeing, for example, in the salmon space that the two major genetic suppliers are actually putting a lot of efforts into create strains that works in land-based. And so the change is happening all over, and it's much maybe more subtle than most people understand, but it's really happening, and the boom, you can say, and the constant revenue of new projects coming out there is developing the industry, and I think that's very exciting. What we just think is that we really need to take it to the next level, right, and bring it even further and more standardized, so we can have an industry where we that's been as successful as the windmill industry or something like that, right?
This is the kind of two stages of development that you can see in almost any new technology. The first stage is the proof of concept, and if the sector cannot prove its concept, it usually goes away. And the exciting part is that we think land-based has crossed that Rubicon with flying colors and is here to stay. The next stage is natural maturity that every other sector has done successfully to scale and become profitable. So there's no reason why these developments cannot happen in land-based. And I think that the growing attendance in and participation of new technologies in this sector, like we see today, is a testament that it's going in the right direction.
You have a question?
I do. Justin Henry's the name. Good morning. Thank you for the very interesting presentation. I have a question about, you talked about your black cod strategy to go a bit in the opposite direction of what the industry's been looking at, to go with what's the smallest farm we can build that can quickly become, you know, quickly break even and become profitable. With your farm in a box, what do you think that size is for Atlantic salmon? What's the smallest salmon farm you can build that can be profitable with your model?
Again, it depends on the business case, right? Power cost is not going to be the same. Cost of water is not going to be the same. You can take the Atlantic Sapphire site where you have a starting cost of 20 million just to drill wells. Then that makes your minimum viable farm a lot bigger, right? If you have, there's already a part of, if there's already a water line that you can take and you can put in, I mean, maybe you have a really good market close by, it can maybe be as few as, 1,000 tons or even smaller. And depending on how dedicated your team, can you operate the farm with 3 people or can you operate it with 5? Depends on the country. And I've seen small scale farms that are profitable that can, they're only 3 employees, but they don't have a life. Right, but that's great, and I've been there. I mean, I've worked many. When we started Atlantic Sapphire in Denmark, we were only 5 employees to a farm that was basically producing 750 tons. Right, so it's a very difficult answer, but for sure the capex and the complexity will be brought down, and therefore we can say this, when the capex goes down, the viability of a smaller project becomes more likely.
Maggie Badiola from the Florida Marine Aquaculture Coalition. So we have talked about the technology and investments, but what about, you also talk about the lack of highly skilled people to run the industry. So how do you think that we should address that? Because I've been in the, not as long as you, I've been in the industry for 15 years now. And from the very beginning, I've seen that there is a lack of skilled people. So how the industry, how should we address this? Because it's a huge gap that we are missing, so.
Yeah, I think it's one of the most important thing is to make the systems as simple as possible, right? Make them as simple possible to operate with as little equipment as possible. Because the lesser equipment and the more simple they are, the more easy is it to maintain and run. And then we are also on the verge of AI. AI is coming really fast. We have a lot of opportunities there where a lot of the things in the farms today are done manually and you really don't become a good operator before 5 years. a lot of those processes that are handled by humans today, which is a very much a smell or a sense or a look in the farm where they are training the screws and doing all of that, we really think we can use advanced software as an AI to challenge these things and build a much better platform for operating these farms. So that's the way we kind of are attacking these two things head on.
Okay.
Thank you. Justin, back to you.
Yeah, thanks. A question about the farm in the box. I like the concept and, you know, agree that we have to get that simplified. A question about construction. Though you mentioned that you could possibly construct it in 30 weeks or shorter with more crew. And as you said that, there happened to be a picture behind you of a 2,500-ton farm. And so were you talking about 30 weeks for a 2,500-ton farm or 100?
Whether it was 30 weeks for...
Are you talking about a... What size of a farm are you talking about for a 30-week construction?
Yeah. I think the design we're working on is focused on prefabrication and fast assembly on site. So it really depends on the target of the customer and on the amount of the number of installation teams deployed. But in theory, a 2,500-ton farm could be deployed in a matter of weeks or months, depending on the local conditions and available workforce.
Is 2,500 tons sort of the benchmark that you're using for estimations? No, not at all? Okay.
No, the idea is that we do the engineering ourselves so our customer doesn't have to. And then when a customer wants, whether it's 1,000 tons of trout, 5,000 of kingfish, or 10,000 of salmon, we're able to effectively Lego piece the different modules and prefabricated systems and say, this is what you need and this is how much it will cost.
Okay. I think we have time for one more audience question if someone has a question, but maybe I can ask a question while we wait for someone that might have a question pop up. So tomorrow we will hear our second keynote with James Tuller at Pure Salmon Technology, and he'll be talking us through the commissioning process. So and there was a question by Maddie as well about getting the right team behind the project. So how important is building that right team to the business case of the RAS project? And what are some successful strategies to ready that team?
I think, as the industry is today, it is core. It's so important, right? To build the right teams around this farm is very, 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 very important. And the pool is limited, right? Even though with a lot of people in the room, that's it is really hard. It takes a lot of time to get skilled operators and getting the right team together. So I think that's true for how the industry looks today.
Is it better than to wait for the right team and with the right skills before, or can you potentially, you know, are there core skills that you really have to have and then we can train the team later on as the project goes? Or what's the best approach there?
I guess it depends how smart people you hire.
Okay, gotcha. Sorry, you have a question?
Yeah, Yoni Zohar from the Institute of Marine and Environmental Technology at the University of Maryland, and on the same point of skilled workforce. So I think we need a very intense partnership between universities, the federal government, and industry. And actually, later in our session, we'll talk a lot about workforce development. So I don't know, there are some probably people from the federal government here, but the federal government starts to fund understanding this wave pause of interest in land base in the United States and the lack of skilled workforce. So there is the beginning of, or not the beginning, but there is a good investment from the federal government. And I think that triangle must be really enhanced, like industry, federal government, and university, like ours and others.
Yeah,
just but I couldn't agree more, Yoni. I think that universities are critical to support the industry, and the partnership of large-scale operators and universities doesn't just begin and end with skilled workforce. It continues throughout the development with testing of new technologies with support of scientific research into the genetics and improvement. At Kingfish in the Netherlands, basically there was a running joke that if you're not from Wageningen, you should go somewhere else. There used to be more MSCs in aquaculture than we knew what to do with, but it was extremely important and helpful, and it's a partnership that continues on an ongoing basis, whether it's testing feeds, testing genetics, selective breeding, and new technologies. I think it's critical.
And don't forget the practical guys too, right? You don't need to go to university to be able to operate a fish farm, right? So you need to get that layer with both on the maintenance side, but also on the farmer operator side. To do those courses also so that you have the flow of the different kind of people, so we don't have only master degrees working at the fish farms. And that's actually what we see today, right, a lot.
Totally. So this workforce development should really focus on people who can graduate, get some certificate, and go to industry.
Yeah, great.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you all. Please join me in thanking Ohad Maimon and Tui Holm. Thank you for being our keynotes.
Jean, that was a really interesting presentation there by Ohad and Tui today. They covered a lot of different topics and got into some details about what they're planning next, or what they've transitioned to from where they were last year. A few things that I liked or that stood out for me was when Ohad was warning against planning for a higher price for your sustainable product, because consumers already expect that the product should be sustainable. And I think that it's improbable that you can really educate the consumer to pay more for RAS. I don't think you should plan a premium price when you're developing your business case.
Yeah, I agree. I think that was a really interesting point in terms of the industry, and my observations as an observer of the industry is that, you know, it's already the industry, the aquaculture industry as a whole, already has this huge responsibility of educating people about what fish farming is, and then to add the specialized technology that is RAS into that discussion is a challenge, is an extra layer of challenge. So I think that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Ohad went on to talk about a business case really that with the newer technology or where the RAS industry has advanced to. He says the fact that we can grow almost any fish almost anywhere doesn't mean that we should. So you really need a business case for what species you're going to grow and what location it should be and the size of it and so on. So I think that's a valuable message for the industry.
The two new projects that Ohad and Tui kind of talk to us a little bit. They give us a little bit of a glimpse of what they're planning in the past year and what they plan to do. So they talked about two projects, Farm in a Box and the Black Cod Company. So for the Farm in the Box, I think what was interesting from that presentation, from what we were discussing about that in the keynote session, was the idea of standardization and modularity. That was something that we talked about throughout the rest of the day and other sessions as well, in terms of this standardization and kind of honing in on the technology and how to kind of commercialize this technology is just part of that journey that the industry is going on in terms of becoming more mature and becoming more predictable, I guess.
Jean, another topic that was brought up, I think by Ohad, where he asked, what is the smallest and fastest that you can break even? So really, it's something I think that the industry is considering now, is if you're planning for a new production facility, what size can it be? Can you start with a smaller farm. You know, the trend has been going larger and larger. But where can you actually start, and where you require less capital to get a project up and running? So I think that's a really important question that I don't think has been answered. And when you go back to the concept of the that they brought up with a more of a simplified, standardized system, perhaps it's a modular system like Habitat Farms is working on, where you have a small production, and is that you know, what's the tonnage, and people have to figure out the, you know, is it 250 tons? Is it 1,000 tons? What's the number that you can start with? So I think it's an interesting question for the industry.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you were right to kind of bring up that question, because as you said, it's something that the industry's constantly talking about. And in sort of the same conversation we had about standardization and modularity, what is the right size, you know, to start with? And how do we kind of grow? How do you know how to grow from there? And what does that plan look like? And how do we make that attractive to investors? It's all, I don't know. I don't think there's sort of a one size fits all answer for this type of question, but it's worth kind of discussing as more RAS projects pop up and as more business models kind of come into the forefront.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see where the industry's at RASTech in 2025.
Just a lot of different icebreakers and topics that you can kind of talk to with the people that you meet there. So hopefully you had some thoughts as well, that we'd love to hear them. But as well, for extra links to articles, for more coverage about the RASTech 2024 event, photos, videos, all of that stuff, go to our website at rastechmagazine.com/podcast. It'll be all there for you. That's rastechmagazine.com/podcast. Please consider sharing this episode with your network and on social media. It truly helps us out and finds new people. You can also follow us on your favorite podcast platform so you don't miss a new episode. Thanks again to our sponsor, OxyGuard International. Secure, grow, evolve. Improve your production with tailored and targeted technology. Thanks for listening.